Hello and welcome to Woman's World, the only show on television where women's issues are put first every time. If it matters to you, then it matters to us, and that's why we're talking about it here. My name is Yvonne Ridley.
And my name is Miriam Francois Serra. Gender issues are often neglected, but not on this show. If there's inequality, we will highlight it, and if there's a serious case of injustice or exploitation, we will expose it.
That's what Woman's World is all about, which brings us very nicely onto today's subject, which is about the advertising industry. We'll be asking if it really does exploit women and manipulate young minds with seductive images and impossibly thin models and their perfect complexions.
What do we really know about those glossy magazine images, and are they selling us an impossible dream? And what is their impact on women and their self-esteem?
But before we talk to today's guests, let's go over to Adam Dean, who put today's topic to Max Carey. He is a leading fashion marketeer.
Advertisers often emphasise sexuality and the importance of physical attractiveness in an attempt to sell more products. But researchers are concerned that this places undue pressure on women to focus on their appearance. The average woman sees 400 to 600 advertisements per day, and by the time she's 17, she has received over 250,000 commercial messages through the media.
The adage says that sex sells. In a consumerist society, sexual images are used to sell anything from lipstick to cars. But what impact does this have on women's conception of self? And what responsibility do advertisers carry for the exponential rise in body dysphoria and eating disorders amongst young women? I'm here to see Max Carey, a fashion marketer with 20 years' experience with some of the major names in the UK. Max, you're a fashion marketer. You've been in the industry for 20 years. Can you explain to us how sexual imagery became prominent in the industry?
It opened up in the 60s, and that led to liberation for women. And whether that then went too far and people regarded it as exploitative or too much flesh on display, it started in the 60s and was a build from there. So actually, it's not that long in a timeline. If you think about 20th century and now, it's not very long.
What responsibility do advertisers have for the impact of imagery?
I don't think advertisers care about anybody apart from themselves. I don't actually think all the fashion business come to think of it. I think people in the fashion business are trying to sell clothes. Advertisers are trying to get column inches and people to watch their adverts or billboards. And, you know, with changing technology, people have to come up with more inventive ways to get their message across.
Is there a correlation with the images put out and the rising eating disorders?
Clothes look better on thin people. Now, that is just how the industry sees it itself. You can be a big girl, you can look fantastic in clothes. You can be a big man in a suit, you can look fantastic and powerful in a suit. It can look, even if you've got a bit of a belly, it doesn't really matter. The idea of eating disorders and, oh, I've seen a thin model, I'm going to not eat. It's like saying, I've seen a Rolls Royce, I'm jealous. You know, it happens. I don't think it's such a strong link. I think it's been blown out of proportion by wanting to be quite PC about things. So I don't really support that.
How would you feel about the industry being regulated?
I don't know if they're ready to regulate themselves because they're all driven by money and advertising. So money drives the industry. And might I say that the fashion business is more cutthroat than, say, the city. And if the city can't regulate and finance themselves, I'll tell you the fashion business is a lot more Wild West.
Ever since the sexual revolution of the 1960s, sexual imagery has become the mainstay of mass media. Magazines, television and film present pencil-thin models with impossibly long legs, photoshopped at times without a regard for realistic human proportions. The consequence of the growing visibility of female bodies has been linked to the rise of eating disorders. So are advertisers to blame for some of the ills plaguing women today?
We've spoken to Max Carey on the development of sexual images in the advertising industry, and it's clear that sexual imagery provides great results for the advertisers. But despite these great results for advertisers, perhaps the greater cost is to women's health and their self-esteem.
Thank you, Adam. Well, today we're joined by Alicia Volkman, a top magazine writer who is never far from the fashion catwalks and runways, bringing us the latest trends and fads.
And sitting next to Alicia is Chris Allen. He's a fashion photographer, and much of his work has been in advertising. Chris, you heard the comments made by Max Carey. Would you agree with them?
I think Max has got a very good point in that advertising is a money-driven business. And with fashion as well, it's all about getting attention.
Would you agree with what he said about perhaps there's too much PC coming in? I know you were bristling, Miriam, with some of his comments.
I think it's very difficult because, say, with the whole size zero thing, size zero is an artificial concept. It's an American size. It doesn't exist here. It's basically selling newspapers. All the column inches that you're getting are about anorexia. Anorexia existed before all this present fuss.
So there's no relationship in your mind between
I'm not saying there's
the
no
images.
Relationship. I'm saying that I think it's much less than the press and the media would have us believe.
Alicia, do you think that we're too obsessed with size?
I think we are too obsessed with size. I think part of the problems is that there isn't actual genuine standardisation of sizes. And people will often just buy something that is a size smaller, even though that size 10 might in fact be a 12 or a 14 to make themselves feel better.
But the models that we see tend to be a fairly standardised size. We know that most models tend to be, let's say, between a size 0 and a size 6 US maximum. Now, yes. Do you think that the standardisation of very thin models has an impact on how women see themselves? Because in reality, those models represent, what, 5% of body types, you know, amongst women generally?
Probably
those
less.
Are the only ones we see.
They're probably less. I mean, models are inordinately tall. When Kate Moss started out, she was 5'7". She wouldn't, you know, make the grade these days. They're looking for taller and taller models, so more and more extreme body types. A standard size sample dress is a UK size 8, which is a US 4 or 6.
But don't you think that you as a fashion writer should take more response? I mean, it would be great if fashion writers really ganged up together and said, let's go for bigger models. These tall, impossibly thin models are unacceptable. Let's go for real women.
I think it's not necessarily coming from fashion writers or even actually fashion editors. Part of the problem, actually, you have to take it back to the modelling industry itself. We, you know, as editors, we may do casting calls, and I personally, you know, I don't cast people who are, you know, stick thin and all elbows and knees, and particularly the sector that I write about is luxury. So I want people who are healthy looking, who look more like an ideal woman. I mean, when, and by ideal, I'm talking about people who are healthy, fit, you know, athletic, more, you know, the archetypes that Cindy Crawford would project. I mean, I don't think people could object to her, but when you're talking about sort of extreme gangly models, they're not relevant, you know, to more womanly luxury sizes. The problem is that the model industry, it's under-regulated. There's no other industry where you could, you know, lose your job for being too fat. I mean, you can't have weigh-ins on flights anymore.
Couldn't photographers, you know, put their foot down and just say, look, we're not doing size zero models anymore. Give us some realistically sized women.
One of the problems that you have is ultimately you're there to satisfy the client. If the client's expectation is for what comes from a model agency, that's what they want. I can say, look, I don't think this works.
Well, what did you think of the comment that Max had made about female liberation being associated with the emergence of these sort of overtly sexual images of women? Would you agree with that?
Yes, because if you go back and you look at the whole course of feminism, for example, in this country, a very important part of it was the acknowledgement of a woman's sexuality. That goes back to the 60s. Strangely, you know, you could blame Mary Quant and the pill.
But do you think that the images that we see in magazines, Eliza, for example, are of powerful female sexuality? Do you not think a lot of them are actually very passive images, women in poses that are infantilising?
The sort of imposed gaze. I mean, if you're talking about some more empowered images, I mean, there was a controversial image with Sophie Dahl where she's reclining and looking, you know, orgasmic. And that's actually quite a dangerous image in society, the idea of a woman, you know, experiencing
ecstasy.
She's
fascinating. Yeah. Sophie Dahl was discovered when she was about a size 16 to 18. Mm. And now she is incredibly thin.
Yes, I was really sad to see her, you know, become that thin.
Chris, and how do you feel when people use your pictures and start to airbrush them, the digital retouches, get their hands on them?
I don't allow that personally.
So that's your personal thing
is, I would always, by preference, I would rather somebody had no makeup. I like somebody to be natural. Like you were saying, somebody who looks healthy looks good. If there's going to be airbrushing done, it's for very small things. But to actually physically alter somebody's shape, no.
Well, a lot of that does happen. So
it's
a growing trend, and we're seeing more demand.
If you have power over your output of your work, not to do it, then that's fine. But an awful lot of the time, you're doing a job, you're selling the images. How the image is finally used is not up to me. It's up to the client. I would rather it wasn't done that way, but people will do it.
But isn't that a bit of a cop-out? I mean, that's a bit like, obviously not as extreme, but a bit like the man who grows poppies in Afghanistan, who says, look, I just grow the flowers. What happens to them after that isn't up to me.
It's a realistic thing. I'm in a business to make money. I'm not in it to take a moral stance particularly. I can take a stance by the jobs I choose to do, the approach I take to the work, and the way that I deal with the people that I work with.
Alicia, do you think there's any issue with sacrificing perhaps women's dignity to profits? Are there any conflicts there that you see from the industry's perspective?
There are always going to be conflicts in big business. How to bring that into line is a very big question. I do think that things have to work at different levels. I do think that part of the problem is that you're dealing with very young people who are probably not that educated in becoming unionised. I mean, you wouldn't be able to, you know, push an actor around the way that a lot of models are pushed around. Actors have to be in equity. They have to be unionised. They're aware of their rights. I think a big problem with young people generally is that they aren't actually aware of their rights. They're not, you know, aware that, you know, you can say no. I mean, I've done lingerie shoots and, you know, models haven't been properly briefed that the, you know, it's that kind of shoot. I have to brief them. But my position is that if that is beyond, you know, their personal limits, that they can say no. My concern is that they're internalised.
Do models who are being paid substantial amounts of money, are they going to realistically sacrifice that?
Because I think they do become complicit.
Right.
I think it's very easy. A lot of their life, they are being, you know, just sent from pillar to post, and their job is being silent. They don't have much say in how their hair's done. As soon as a model stands on set, they are basically being told, they're told what to wear. You know, they just have their hair done. They might suddenly discover that they're having their eyebrows waxed.
Sure. Well, we've had a really lively discussion here in the studio, but what did the general public say? Let's turn to Don Slack, who asked them about today's topic.
The way women are depicted in advertising, does it affect your body image and the body image of women generally?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, without a doubt. I think it creates an unrealistic expectation of what you can look like and what buying all this stuff might achieve for you in your life. So yes, I do think it can be a bit exploitative.
I think that having women who look very perfect in advertising does, even if just subconsciously, affect the way women feel about themselves. Definitely.
Yes, I think so, because everybody, especially people of my age, they always think that they have to be like all those models.
Do you think this kind of advertising exploits women's bodies and objectifies women?
Well, in this society, yes.
Advertising is selling an ideal, selling aspiration, as is fashion. And if it isn't aspirational, it doesn't sell. So I think that's the problem with it.
You know, there are other ways to sell clothes, not just a sort of semi-naked body that's very thin.
If you see that all the time, you kind of get the impression you have to look like this as well. But it doesn't exploit women, no.
How influenced do you think teenage girls are by this kind of advertising and the images that they see?
That I couldn't say for sure, but I think, you know, I think it does have it has an impact on young women.
Very, very affected. I know quite a few people who are, who are getting exploited because of, you know, their weight. So they have this constant thing where they have to, oh, I'm on this diet, I can't eat that.
I think they're really affected. I think it's probably a really big problem.
I think there is a big influence, and you can visually see it as well with what is available for younger kids to wear and stuff.
I think they get influenced quite a lot by it. But in which way, it always depends where you're from, what your friends say. I think that's a bigger point.
Do you think the advertising industry should be regulated more?
I think it'd be really, really hard to regulate it fully to the point where there was no effect anymore.
Probably has its own self-regulation. I think at the first point, that's probably a bit better than having any sort of government regulations to start with.
Definitely. I think it's some of the images that are put towards, especially, I mean, I work in schools, and especially towards younger children, are absolutely disgraceful.
Well, fascinating stuff there, Alizi. Do you think that the advertising industry should be regulated?
The advertising industry, in part, is regulated. Mm-hmm. But we're in a grey area in terms of what adverts say and truthfulness. It goes back to all the debates, you know, which is whiter. But the thing is that there's no kind of regulation of issues about, you know, representation and, you know, actually looking at fundamental employment rights of models and, you know, the individual empowering them.
Well, what about objectification? The young girls in the Vox Pop were talking about the impact that this genuinely has on their lives and the fact that they feel very affected by this pressure. Yes. Shouldn't there be some regulation of the fact there's a sort of standardised white, thin, female, half-naked body being used to sell things from cars to toothbrushes? Shouldn't there be some sort of regulation in place to protect our young people from these influences?
I think that's a very difficult thing to do. I would like to see more positive images. It has to come in, actually, I think, through education and, you know, better education on fashion journalism courses and advertising courses, that we actually start building up a culture. I mean, models used to have more of an identity. If you're going back to the 70s, women like Jerry Hall and Mary Halvin, who's also renowned as a political campaigner,
Would you agree with that, Chris?
I think it would be almost impossible. I can't see how you could set up some means by which you adjudicate an image. Mm-hmm. I think that there are things in place. If an image is patently out of place, then it's already regulated.
Well, but how about a naked woman on a tractor? I remember seeing an advert years ago of a naked woman on a tractor. Now, I know how practical farmers are, and I can't think of a single farmer who would buy a tractor because of that.
An image that came up recently, which was tractor. Philippa Hamilton, whose body had been digitally altered so that her head was actually physically bigger than her pelvis. I mean, should there not be some regulation of the fact that we're being sold images that are not even real representations of women?
I think that's a very extreme example. I mean, to me, without seeing the image,
GQ front cover, her thighs digitally altered, according to her, to a third of the size that they are in reality. I mean,
it's a problem that you have all the way through the industry. Look, people have become obsessed because you've got Photoshop. It's easy to do. People are selling this idea that everything has to be perfect. I think that will change in time. Will change through the economic situation as well.
But who is going to take responsibility for the 15-year-old girl who has bulimia or anorexia? Because she looks at your pictures and she reads your copy. Who is going to say enough?
Good question.
That is a good question. I mean, The issue of eating disorders isn't anything new, and my personal feeling is that there can't be a radical sudden change and clamp down. It doesn't work, and you trying to, you know, handcuff creative people is impossible as well. What we do need to change on a fundamental level actually starts with educating young girls about their own identity,
but
about finding their voice
and
strength.
But how can you do as a writer, as a fashion writer?
Yeah, how can they develop their own identity if only images they see are of a standardised, half-naked white female body as a singular image of beauty?
I do feel here we're being a little bit unfair on the average teenager. Look. You have a society of kids who are so media savvy. They understand that this is not real life.
I think you'll find that most of them,
if you do look and you talk to kids, they are incredibly aware of how imagery
works.
But
in Europe, there is a real problem with anorexia. It's an increasing problem. Italy is having a huge problem. I think there were more than 10,000 cases of anorexia just last year.
Which is ironic because their sample sizes are significantly bigger. Mm. I work with Laura Piana. Sample sizes they sent me were a British size 14.
Well, but Italian Vogue just last month had a digitally enhanced figure of a model with a 13-inch waist, and that sort of image caused outrage among the bulimia associations in Italy.
I think really you're talking about, there is an intermediary, the post-production industry. Now, sometimes, you may want an extreme image. There are extremely digitally altered images of Björk, but because they're a creative digital alteration, we wouldn't object to seeing her neck incredibly thin and, these...
Well, let me put you both on the spot. The yes or no answer, does sex sell? Do you need sex to sell images?
No.
You need to create ideas of desire and fantasy.
No, from the photographer.
Yeah.
Chris? Eliza?
No.
I don't think I think you need creativity to sell. There's no issue about creating ideals and fantasies that we can dream about. That is the whole history of creativity from year dot. What there is a problem is I think we've become so divorced from what is natural and what is actually real, that particularly digital retouchers who spend all the time in a studio are divorced from the real. I've had conversations.
How are you going to replace these sexualized images? What's the alternative?
I think there's been over the last 10-20 years a huge amount of lazy image making. I think that it's a matter of going back and just re-looking at stuff. Ultimately, the run of images...
Well, we're going to have to end the show there. Unfortunately, we could go on for a lot longer, but it's the end of this week's Woman's World. We will be back again next week with more stories, views and issues close to the women of this world.
And their men. So it's goodbye from me, Myriam-Françoise Serra, and Yvonne Ridley. Women's World will be back next week at the same time.